thanks for downloading this podcast from RNIB Connect Radio.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. It's time for the Happy Hour, and as always, Holly and Paulina with you for the next little while.
And in true Happy Hour style, we're chatting happy body, happy mind, and happy soul.
We've got lots coming up on today's show, but first, here's Blondie and Heart of Glass. You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Holly Tuke here, and as always, I'm joined by producer Paulina.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and we've got a really busy show for you, don't we, Holly?
We do indeed. I'll be chatting with visually impaired chef Kim Jay, who will be reflecting on her sight loss journey and how she's found ways of making cooking accessible, as well as telling us about all the wonderful work she's doing to empower the vision impairment community.
Plus, Dave Steele, the blind poet himself, returns to the show to share one of his poems with us. And RNIB Connect Radio's Ellie Marsh is here again, and this time she's finding out all about Dance Dosti, a new and inclusive dance project.
Next up, Paulina will be finding out about the Samaritans Small Talk campaign and how small talk, reassurance and listening can make a difference to someone in crisis. That's coming up right after this track by Cure. This is Friday, I'm in Love. You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, Paulina is going to find out about the Samaritans Small Talk campaign.
After an incredibly tough year, and as the nation begins to readjust to life with easing restrictions, a campaign by Samaritans launched in partnership with Network Rail, British Transport Police, and the wide rail industry wants to empower the public to act and prevent suicide on the railways and other settings. Titled Small Talk Saves Lives, the campaign reminds us that we already have the skills to start a conversation with someone who needs help. All we need is a little small talk. And joining us in the studio is Dom Mottram, Network Rail employee whose life was saved thanks to a kind stranger and thanks to a little bit of small talk. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dom.
Good to be here.
Now, Dom, the campaign, it's been around for a few years, but why is it so important to start it again now? And why is it important that we pay attention to it?
I think it's always important to use small talk to save lives. I'm standing here because in 2008, somebody did that for me and saved my life. And through my work at Network Rail, I've been able to use it to go and save others. So I think from that point of view, small talk does save lives, and it is important. It doesn't have to be necessarily at a certain time of year, at a certain time, you know, of within the this millennium. It's just, it helps all the time. It's able to help anybody, and it's scientifically proven that it can. So I think the main point for us is that anybody can use small talk to save lives. Anything from asking how the weather is to asking if somebody, you know, can get a, where people can get a coffee around a certain place if they approach people. Anything that, you know, if we're allowed to go to the pub, for example, and you know, while your pint is being poured, you can, you know, you have small talk with the person the other side of the bar. So while we think, you know, as a population within the UK that we can't do small talk, anything is small talk. Anybody can do it. You don't have to be specially trained. Anybody can intervene. And if they don't feel comfortable doing that, they can approach other people like staff in the vicinity, the British Transport Police, or in a big emergency, they can call 999. So anybody can do it, and anybody has access to the tools to be able to do it.
And that's the thing. I feel like for the past few months, or over a year now, actually, during the pandemic, a lot of us actually did a bit more small talk than we're used to.
Absolutely. I you know, I've lived in where I've lived for about 10 years now. And, you know, I say hello to my neighbors, but there wasn't any kind of like big conversation. I think lockdown, you know, we were making each other cakes. My local supermarket was running out of flour and eggs and all of these things because people were making things and having that conversation. And I think even now, as we come out of a lockdown, whether, you know, people are still able to make small talk, people can do it, people can, you know, people might even want to do it more because they've missed that interaction. And I think that we found scientifically that just that small interaction makes people, you know, feel like you care.
And we have just gone through a period of quite long and widespread isolation. So being able to reconnect with others, even if it's just on something as mundane as weather, can really make someone's day, especially someone who is going through a really tough time.
Absolutely. It can make any small talk can make anybody's day, you know, all the way from, you know, how bad Harry Kane or not was, you know, in Euro 2020, you know, the weather, anything like that. So it's just, it's that human contact. We're all, you know, people have emotions. We're all, you know, emotional people. So it's just making sure that, you know, we feel comfortable and we can reach out, you know, even if you don't think, you know, if you think you're going through a hard time, being able to reach out yourself or people, you know, reaching out to you is all that it takes.
So Dom, where can we find more information about the campaign?
If you go onto the Samaritans website or you search Small Talk Saves Lives into any search engine, there will be, you'll be directed to more information and resources that people can use, and tips to get people, you know, being able to use small talk to save lives. And obviously in the next kind of you know, few weeks, you'll see everything on Facebook, Twitter or social media as we kind of ramp up this campaign to say, you know, really small talk can save lives.
And you actually speak from experience as well. You already said so, but you've went on to also help other people that have found themselves in a similar situation as yourself.
Yes. So small talk saved my life, but also I've used it, you know, in my job with Network Rail to be able to intervene and to be able to save others. So it just shows, you know, how straightforward it can be. You know, you don't need to be specially trained. It's just being able to use the ability you have to make small talk with people and to interact with them.
Thank you so much, Dom Mothram from Network Rail. Thank you for speaking on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.
And as Dom said there, remember, when life is difficult, Samaritans are here, day or night, 365 days a year. So you can call them for free on 116 123 or email them at joe@samaritans.org or visit samaritans.org to find your nearest branch.
One night to be confused, one night to speed up truth. We had a promise made for hands and then away, both under influence.
Kim J is a blind chef and author of two cookery books, A Taste of Spice and A Sense of Cooking. She's also the creator of the Facebook page and YouTube channel Kim J Cooks, where she shares recipes and cooking tutorials to empower the vision impairment community. I'm very pleased to say that Kim joins me on the line now. Thank you so much for joining me on the Happy Hour, Kim.
No, thank you for having me.
How did you find your passion for cooking?
Well, I'm Indian, so it's very much a cultural thing from, you know, sort of the age of 5 or 6, you know, sort of we're brought up to sort of go into the kitchen and to start cooking and to learn the various dishes. And it's very inbred in our culture. And like most cultures, sort of we mark all our sort of main things that go on and sort of the different festivities with food. So it's a big thing in well, the life of sort of an Indian family. So that's where my passion rose from. And my mother had 7 sisters and 6 brothers. So it was a large family. And I was born in Kenya and they had a hotel there. So they all learned to cook. They're all excellent cooks. And it just passes from generation to generation.
You lost a substantial amount of your sight when you were 30 years old. How did it feel when you were finding ways of making cooking accessible during this time? Was it a positive journey or were there challenges along the way?
Well, I lost my sight, like you said, when I was 30, about sort of 25 years ago. I've just given away my age, but I suppose it doesn't matter. But I had four small children, and at the time I literally lost, it was about 90% of sight. It slowly sort of came back, still very, you know, visually impaired, but I developed peripheral vision and colours. But at the time there was nothing available at all. And it was a shock to the system, as it is for anyone who suddenly loses their sight. And I remember sort of the first time, it was about 6 weeks after I'd lost my sight. And sort of my husband at the time left me alone with my four children and went away to work with absolutely no consideration on how somebody that is newly visually impaired going to manage with four children under the age of eight. And I went into the kitchen to make a sandwich for them and a cordial, and I can't tell you, I was almost in floods of tears at the thought of it. But, you know, four small children, hungry, got to feed them. So managed to get the bread, managed to get some cheese and pickle and the cordial out, got the margarine out, made the sandwich and put it down in front of them. And one of my daughter turned round and said, "Mum, is this sandwich supposed to be green?" And then she took a sip of the cordial, and it turned out that instead of cordial, I'd used oil.
Oh, no.
So it was, and at that time, it suddenly hit me, because I was really ill at the time. So, you know, the whole sight loss thing, the whole sort of illness thing hadn't hit me. And at that point, it suddenly dawned on me what had happened. And I sat down and I just burst into tears, and I'm not a crier. And I just went really quiet and thought, I've got to do something about this. I can't, you know, I've got to do something. I can't sit here and do nothing for the rest of my life, because that's how it feels like. So I approached the visual impairment team with my local council, who gave me long cane training. But at the time, there wasn't much out there service-wise to help me, to teach me how to do simple things like make a sandwich. And like I said, food is a passion. So four small children, so I taught myself, and it was difficult. And the first thing I did was I just started smelling everything, smelling the spices, smelling the various meats, feeling the texture. And then I would sort of cook a piece of chicken, and I would sort of test it and sort of sense how cooked the chicken was, how the flesh changed in texture. And it was a long sort of road trying to teach myself all these things. The worst thing for me is that sense of feeling non-productive. So I taught myself everything I needed to know about cooking. I changed my kitchen around so that it worked around me. I learnt grade one Braille and sort of Brailled everything that I could. I used markers. I used all the different types of way of finding myself around the kitchen. And I managed to get a company to help me do all the health and safety qualifications I needed. And I even sort of took my bar exam so that I could actually sell alcohol, did all of that, and then thought, what am I going to do with all this now I've done this? So together with my husband, we opened a restaurant. And we sold fusion cuisine, which we had for a year until my marriage broke down. And then that was it. I was back to square one again. And that's when sort of R&IB came along. And then one of the managers rang up and said, Kim, there's this Asian festival going on. My volunteers just backed out. Will you come? And I meant to say no. I really did need to say no. But yes came out. And went to this festival and I took some food because it's an Indian festival and I knew, you know, sort of, you're going to have food. So I took the food and we had a store with all the pamphlets on and absolutely terrified. I was absolutely terrified. But within half an hour, you start talking to people and you start talking to people about your condition. And then all of a sudden what you hear is, you know, sort of they're eating the food and they're saying, you actually made this. And I said, yes. And I was showing them what my eye condition was and they just couldn't believe it. But, you know, I've got a mother, I've got an aunt, I've got a sister who's got glaucoma, who's got macular degeneration. They don't do anything. And I was trying to explain to them how I did it and how I cooked and how I used my senses. And at that stage, sort of my manager was sort of listening and he said, Kim, how would you feel if we did an accessible cookery class? And I said, well, yeah, I'd be happy with that because I'm confident cooking. And so they then helped me re-qualify with all my health and safety certificates. And we did our first cookery class just to see how it went, and everything that went wrong could have got wrong, but we learned a lot. We were just in the process of setting the first proper cookery class and COVID struck. So with the help of my support worker, we did one video. I thought I'll just do one recipe and put it out and see how it goes. And yeah, it went extremely well. We did it just on sort of our region Facebook page. And then we tried it on the rest of the RNIB Facebook pages and then on other Facebook pages. And within 3 or 4 months, the videos had gone viral. We were in sort of on the website, over 40 countries had viewed them. And sort of the biggest thing that hits you is the fact that there is a need for this. And that's kind of how this whole thing started.
It sounds like you've come such a long way. Thinking about where you are today, do you ever feel daunted by the various aspects of cooking as a person with a vision impairment? Or is it more of a sense of determination and pride?
It's a sense of definitely determination. You're doing something and you can do it and you know you're good at it. And I know that I do still need a bit of support because of the neurological conditions. So things like sort of, you know, sort of peeling potatoes and things. The fact that I can do it and that I don't need anybody else to say, well, you've not put enough salt in, you've not put enough turmeric in, you've not got enough sugar, you're burning this. I don't need them for that. And that means more than anything else.
There are many assumptions surrounding sight loss. Have people ever made any assumptions about how you cook up a storm in the kitchen as a blind chef?
Oh gosh, yes. The amount of times I get asked, but you can see, you know, I'm constantly being told, you can see. And I say, no, I can't. I have a great big circular thing in both eyes. I'm seeing on the peripheral. Yes, I've got colour. Yes, in the peripheral, I can see things and I can read odd bits of word, but the majority is missing. And it's almost as if people assume that because you're visually impaired, you can't do it. And the fact that I'm doing it means that I'm not visually impaired. And that assumption really, really, you know, it does kind of get to you because it's labelling you. And I'm not a label. I am not visually impaired. I am Kim. I am who I am. Whatever that makeup of mine is, that's who I am. Recently, I was asked a question which kind of sort of threw me for a little bit. And somebody sort of said, Do you think of yourself as a visually impaired chef or as a chef? Now, if you asked me when I was in my restaurant, it would be a chef, definitely. First and foremost, I'm a chef. But now it's changed. Now I'm a visually impaired chef. The visually impaired bit isn't for me. It's for others to take note and to say, yes, having an impairment doesn't mean that your whole world stops. You can do it. So at the moment, you know, sort of, I don't mind that assumption because it is educating others, which I think is quite important.
If you had one piece of advice for any blind or visually impaired people who may feel daunted by cooking, what would it be?
You can do it. Don't let anything stop you. I always say that with any kind of disabilities, life has this great big obstacle in front of you. Everybody else jumps over the obstacle. When you're visually impaired, you can't jump over that obstacle because you can't see it. But what you do do is you go around it. Sometimes you need a little bit of support. Sometimes it's all the way around. Sometimes part of the way around. And sometimes it takes you a lot longer than it does for those that are jumping over the other end. But by the time you get around that obstacle, you are 100 times better than the person that's jumped over it. You are more experienced and you're more confident. Don't give up on your passions. If it's cooking, if it's running, if it's climbing a mountain, and what you gain from doing these things makes you feel whole and it makes you feel like a person and it makes you feel like you, not the label that society is constantly trying to impose on you.
Kim, it's been wonderful to chat to you. I'm sure we could carry on the conversation about cooking and your amazing story, but thank you so much for joining us on the Happy Hour.
Oh, thank you.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
Dolly Parton and her amazing track 9 to 5. You're listening to the Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio with Paulina and Holly. Now, we do have something a little different for you now, as our previous guest, Dave Steele, the blind poet himself, returns. He has a very special poem to share with us. So, Dave, take it away.
I know that you can't see me as I pass you in the street. And every day I move out your way so not to trip your feet. I wonder how your life is. Hope your days are filled with love. I hope others are considerate. In crowds, don't push and shove. I close my eyes for a moment, wondered how I'd feel if it were me. I think it would be so scary if my loved ones couldn't see. But every time I see you, there's a smile upon your face. I wonder if it's just a front or happy days you don't waste. I'd like to one day talk a while, many things I'd like to ask. And when you'd need, I'd lend a hand through friendship, never task. I see you with your guide dog, wonder how it knows the way. She must be just so clever as she guides you round each day. I sometimes think you glance my way, but no, how could that be? Because everybody knows that when you're blind, you cannot see. Well, how did I not think before? There's more than just one stage. I thought I knew your story, but forgot to turn the page. I finally think I understand. It's never black and white. It's crazy just to think that they all lose it overnight. So next time that I see you, I will promise to say hi. I'd like to understand more as your vision fades and dies. I'd like to know exactly what you can and cannot see. I'd like to raise awareness so that others think like me. I'd like to change the way some view disabled people weak. I'd like to stop opinions before we've had the chance to speak.
The blind poet Dave Steele there sharing a powerful message that sight loss isn't just black and white. Next up, RNIB Connect Radio's Ellie Marsh will be finding out about Dance Dosti, a new inclusive dance project for blind and partially sighted people. But first, here's Bon Jovi and It's My Life.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted.
Now we're going to find out all about Dance Dosti, a partnership between Metro Blind Sport, Step Change Studios and British Blind Sport. Our Ellie Marsh has more.
We are joined by Rashmi Becker, who is the founder of Step Change Studio, who have partnered up with Metro Blind Sport to launch Dance Dosti, a multilingual and on-demand service for people with sight loss. Thank you for joining me, Rashmi. So can you tell me a little bit about the project and where the idea originated?
Well, the idea originated off the back of the sort of year and a half we've had with the pandemic. I was very conscious of the disproportionate impact of the pandemic on people from an Asian background and also disabled people. And I am South Asian. I am the guardian to a disabled brother who has a visual impairment. And I was running various sort of online programs, Zoom programs for participants with sight loss. And it just made me really conscious that it would be good to do more. And so in partnership and discussion with Metro Blind Sport and also British Blind Sport, I put forward this idea of creating some digital video and audio content in different languages for blind and visually people with visual impairments. And the idea was to create this content in different languages, so different Asian languages as well. And fast forward, thanks to their support and the funding from Vision Foundation, we've created a digital platform with 128 videos in English, Bengali, Gujarati and Hindi, and audio, both with standing and seated dance options. And we're just really excited to be putting that out there today.
Absolutely, it's so exciting. And what do you think people get out of the sessions? Because they're quite different, a quite different idea. You know, using dance as a form of exercise is becoming more popular. But what do you think people get out of getting involved in these sessions?
What I've found in setting up Step Change Studios is that it's really important for people to be active for their mental and physical health. But a lot of sport, with in inverted commas, can be off-putting and sometimes there are lots of rules and there's kit, and I think it can be more challenging to be active sometimes through other types of sport. But dance is very social. It's something that anyone can do, and people really seem to connect, and it really has the power to bring people together. And it's almost as if you're accidentally getting fit when you're dancing. And we've just found it really resonates, and it acts as a really positive gateway for people then being able to feel able to try different activities and to try more traditional sports. So I think with what we're offering, it's the opportunity to have a go at some dancing. We have different levels. So we have sessions that are slow and very steady, and we have some very rapid sessions with more rapid descriptions. But it's a chance to just at home or wherever you like to have a go at dancing in different styles, from Bollywood to hip hop and Latin dance. And so to try that out and hopefully to increase your confidence and to just have some moments to yourself where you can let loose and get fit. And then hopefully later in the year, we'll also be doing some live dance pilots. So hopefully you'll also develop some confidence to take part in real life dance as well.
I suppose the fact that people can do these from home as well, if they're just starting out or they're not very confident at dancing, they can sort of do it at home and nobody can see them, and they can be a bit silly and like you say, build up the confidence in a space where they feel safe.
Definitely. And I think what also so many of us have learned through our work is that the pandemic has made us turn to online. And I think initially we thought this was an alternative to being able to do real life dance and work. But actually, we found it's been a real lifeline and provided new opportunities for all of us. And there are so many people, for whatever reason, that may not be able to leave their home. So being able to just tune in to a session when you like, being able to press stop, to start again, and to do it in your own time, in your own way, just opens up a lot more opportunities. And again, people who are more at risk, and so disabled people, people from certain backgrounds, have also had to isolate more. And I think it's just increased, certainly for many of us, that level of anxiety in going back out and taking part in sort of group activities again. So I hope this provides a helpful tool and resource for people.
Absolutely. And as you just mentioned there, disabled people and people from different backgrounds, South Asian backgrounds, have been further isolated through the pandemic. What can we do to change that and to ensure that as we come out of lockdown and as we are allowed to go out a little bit more, to make sure that people feel included and that we're all, that we're in touch with each other as we move forward?
That's a really important question, because I think all of us can be doing so much more, but it doesn't take a lot just to think about how you can be more inclusive, and how you can make, if you're an exercise provider, for example, or a dance provider, or you're involved in sport or physical activity in some way, but also the areas that support it, like transport and so on, is to really ask yourself, you know, how inclusive are you, and what can you do to make people more welcome and more able to access what you provide. And that's a whole range of things. It can be things, it can range from language and the marketing that you do and how you market as well. So are you going out to the right places? Is it clear that who can take part in your sessions? How you adapt sessions? For example, when we were running real life sessions, we had volunteers to support people to get from stations to venue and so on, and to support people in class. And, you know, there's a huge drive to increase volunteering in the country, and we have fantastic volunteers. So thinking about how you can engage more of the community in what you do and how you deliver, and just making sure that you're operating in a way that makes people feel welcome.
And through the work that you yourself are doing, you've made a big impact. I mean, last week you were awarded an MBE in the honours list. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so it was for services to disabled people, and it was just a big surprise, but also extremely humbling, because especially this past year and a half, we've all seen so much selflessness and people rolling up their sleeves and doing what they can to support people in the community, and everyone's just been working so hard, but it is just really lovely to be recognized, and it just, you know, it does make you feel like the work that you do is valued. And you know, I and Step Change Studios has so much support. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without our brilliant teachers, partners, funders, volunteers, so many, even from the commercial sector, people helping us with in-kind support and so on. And so it's fantastic to have what we do recognised, and to say, look, this is important, and it is important to think about what you do and making sure that what you do is inclusive and accessible.
Absolutely. Well, a massive congratulations, Rashmi. So where can we find out more about the Dance Dosti and get involved with them?
So the best place to go is to dancedosti.com. And all you have to do, it's very easy. There's a simple registration process, and then you can access all the dance content, so the videos and audio, for free. So once you've signed up once, you can just go back to it as many times as you like. And we will have further updates on live pilots later in the year.
Brilliant. Rashmi, thank you so much for joining me. Congratulations on your MBE, and best of luck with everything in the future.
Thank you so much.
Ellie Marsh there. Do you feel like doing a bit of dancing now, Paulina?
I'm going to be honest, I'm feeling a little bit lazy, because we've had some lovely, lovely cats join our home, and they are so, so lazy that I think it's actually catching on. All I want to do is just, you know, find a sunny spot, lay down and sleep. I don't want to do anything else.
I mean, I'll take that as a no then. Can we at least finish the show before you go and do that?
Yeah, I'll have my cat nap later. So what's coming up next, Holly?
We've got another track for you now. This is Meghan Trainor and All About That Bass. What a throwback.
It is indeed.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, 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 bass. Yeah, it's pretty clear. I ain't no size two, but I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. I got that boom boom that all the boys chase, and all the right junk in all the right places. I see the magazine working that Photoshop.
It's the end of this week's Happy Hour, but we have one final thing for you. Regular listeners may know that we finished the show with our Motivational Song of the Week feature, but that actually has a new name. Paulina, do you want to explain a bit more, as all the credit goes to you for this one?
Well, I wouldn't say all the credit, but I will take what I can get. So a recent interview we had here on the Happy Hour was all about music therapy, and that got me thinking about the power of music. So we're now renaming the Motivational Song of the Week feature to our Music Therapy Moment.
What would your music therapy moment be? Let us know. Email radio@rnib.org.uk or tweet at @rnibradio.
Or, you know, you can find us on Facebook. It's, you guessed it, RNIB Connect Radio.
This week's music therapy moment is a brand new track, which I'm so excited to play. The first time I heard it, the lyrics really spoke to me. This is Dermot Kennedy and Better Days.
We hope you enjoyed this one, and we'll see you on the next show. Bye.
See you next time.
Waiting on a train that just won't come.
Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full along with all the interviews, tips and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. But for now, I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.
For more downloads like these, visit rnibconnectradio.org.uk/podcasts.